Mr. Herman.
Poop again. Party on, dude.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Extreme close up.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. I'm Steven, and it's just me right now at the top doing this intro, just to let you know that, as you can see by this release, it is a re-release, another re-release. Unfortunately, this last weekend, we were unable to record again. However, we should be firing on all cylinders in the next couple weeks, not only because we're going to be having another special guest on to talk about something very, very nostalgic for the three of us and celebrating a 30-year anniversary coming up. We also have our Halloween series of episodes coming up. We are so excited for that. We have some really cool stuff that we want to do. Maybe we'll get to do all of it. Maybe we'll call an audible. Either way, you're going to be getting some Halloween content in the next few weeks, kind of nearing the end of September into October. Leading into the end of October, we are going to end our Halloween stuff a little earlier than we usually do, because at the end of October, the very last Friday of October, we will be celebrating our 100th episode of the Radcast. We're going to be doing something non-Halloween related, but we are going to be doing something very, very special. We are very excited for that. Cannot wait. And also, kind of still in line with Halloween, we have a good friend of the show who's going to be giving you a little bit of a Halloween promo here in just a second. If you've been listening to us for any number of time during those Halloween episodes, you probably know who it is. However, we'll get to him here in just a second. But before all of that, this episode is a re-release of one we did in 2019, in September 2019, with longtime guest of any of our shows, Jeremy Weed. This was his second appearance onto the show, and this was the second entry into our 90s sports series, which we just picked back up with 90s hockey, probably about a month and a half ago with our buddy and brother in podcasting, Joe Gilbert. This one is special too, because at the time I'm recording this, week one of the NFL season has just come to a conclusion. We are going into week two, so kind of relevant to what's going on, but one of our favorite episodes we did in 2019, and we're happy to share it with you now on this Radcast re-release. But first, here's a little bit of a Halloween teaser.
Greetings, dear listeners. It is I, Count Yuli, back with you for another year of Halloween on the Radcast. The next few weeks will be bone-chilling, spine-tingling, and frightening enough to scare the pants off of you. Either that, or you'll just enjoy yourself listening to the guys talk topics fit for the beloved spooky season. No matter what you get from it, make sure you lock your doors, turn out the lights, and tune in to this year's Halloween on the Radcast.
We are back here, and we're going to be talking about football in the 90s.
Yeah, so it's sort of part of our... We already did baseball in the 90s, mm-hmm. And in that episode, we decided that once every 5 or 6 or 7 episodes, mm-hmm. we'd like to visit all the 4 major sports, but like to visit them in probably the, I think a lot of people would agree, the greatest decade.
The major food groups.
All the major, all my favorite never foods. but like, there's just something about these sports in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just because they decided to take more chances in terms of marketing. There were more characters. Like, I think people just kind of got bored with what we had, and they were just kind of going out on a limb with some things.
I think honestly it kind of like was the start of pageantry.
Yeah.
In a lot of this stuff. Yeah. Like, I mean, you have it now, but you almost have it more and less now, if that makes sense. Like, you have it more over the top, like, when it comes to, like, Super Bowl celebrations or Super Bowl halftime show is kind of what I meant to say. And, you know, some of the over-the-top touchdown celebrations they do in football and basketball, you know, the basketball, a lot of the NBA players after the game will wear those really flamboyant outfits or crazy stuff. And, you know, that's today. But, like, back then, I think, like, they marketed the crap out of everything.
Yeah.
Like, everything was a product. And, like, the thing, like, we'll get into it, but, like, i.e., a great example for football in the 90s, Monday Night Football. Who doesn't know, are you ready for some football?
Let's talk about that right now.
If you do not care about football, almost everybody knows that.
I think every sport sort of, at least in the 90s for the four major leagues, I think they all share the same form of marketing in the respect that they didn't take themselves as seriously anymore. You were saying how, you know, nowadays you have characters, and you had characters in like the 70s and in the 80s, like Billy White Shoes Johnson, or you had like the Icky Shuffle and stuff like
Joe Namath.
But they were almost seen as novelties. When you get down to the root of the game, it's like, okay, well, let's get the circus act out of here because this is a serious game. Whereas like every sport didn't really take itself so seriously anymore. Like it, it embraced the pageantry, like you said. It embraced this sort of character in and of itself and its presentation and, and whatnot. And football especially, which is what we're talking about today.
It became much more of a product.
I think football kind of led the way. I mean, basketball in the 80s kind of really started ramping up the exposure for the game with some of these, with more kind of like, I guess, edgier players, more, you know, kind of off the wall antics, the 70s and 80s, but then it kind of bled its way into all the other major sports, football especially. I mean, well, again, we'll get into it, but just
let's get into it now.
So like starter jackets, Zubaz.
Oh yeah, Zubaz pants.
So if you think of like the height of sports fashion in the 90s, it's decorated all throughout football because you get these companies, whether it's an upstart or a company like Nike or Reebok, you know, you start to see it's a chain reaction. You see the exposure these players are getting. So it's marketed. These players are marketed more and more as these salesmen. So you get more and more, spokespeople,
merchandising deals.
I'm so stupid that I'm forgetting, endorsements.
Endorsements. There you go.
Golly.
That's okay. Based on a Wheaties box.
Yeah, exactly. But like, besides Wheaties, you know, in sports, I guess Wheaties and cigarettes and baseball cards, but like you get
Wheaties, cigarettes, baseball cards.
You know,
everything a growing boy needs.
The diet
in the
of a 12-year-old boy in the '50s.
Wheaties, cigarettes.
but you know what I mean. Like these are now
they're starting to market more things.
You can start using these athletes as totems to hawk your things.
They almost start embracing the theatrics now.
Right.
Like look at a pair of Zubaz pants.
Oh yeah.
They look absurd. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
But stylish.
At the time it was stylish. We're taking chances. This is something different. Mm-hmm. You know, same with starter jackets. You have like your team is emblazoned is I think I used that wrong. Your team is like strewn across the jacket and it's so big and gaudy and stuff like that. And I think that was just the time in which these sports sort of embraced that sort of over the top, you know, different creative approach. Yeah. You know,
and it's just not slapped across. It's these big two-toned like jackets, stuff like that.
Well, and posters too. Like gone were the days of just nobody has posters anymore.
No.
Like it's at least maybe it's just because I'm older, but when I was a kid, like
not
posters
of that.
Were the,
not
right.
of that.
Well, and they don't make posters. So like leading up to like the 90s, posters you put on your wall were just action shots.
Yeah.
And they started to get a bit more creative, and I said theatrical before. So you had like these posters of Dan Marino, with his Dolphins jersey tucked into a pair of Zubaz pants.
Yeah.
In front of a convertible and says armed and dangerous.
Yeah.
Or Dan Majkowski.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says Magic Man. Like, and he's dressed like a really.
It's got a sleeveless tuxedo.
Yeah, he's like a really bad kid's magician.
Yeah, and like just a really weird looking like mullet, like crop top mullet. Yeah. In there. He's a weird looking guy.
It's odd. It's kind of a little startling.
And it's a little funny because, you know, he wasn't a star for very long.
No, he was like, he had like maybe 2 good years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and they also took Kurt Warner, Kurt with a C, little running back, Kurt Warner, not.
Hall of Fame,
bag boy Kurt Warner.
They took
the running back Kurt Warner with a C, and he was like wearing like futuristic gear, and it said Blade Runner on it.
Yeah,
and I was like, whoever heard of Kurt Warner? Probably after this poster was put out. Like, unless you were a Seattle Seahawks
who
fan.
Who bought that Kurt? I guess if you were a Seahawks fan or worked at a bar or whatever in Seattle, like who's gonna buy that Kurt Warner one?
His parents.
Well, that's true.
My baby's face is on here.
Kurt, he's like, Blade Runner.
They're like, we got enough pictures of him around here. I don't want another one saying he's a Blade Runner.
We don't need him dressed like the Tin Man.
Who cares?
There's also
dressed
those,
like the Tin Man.
If you listen to our last episode, Trading Cards, they also had Trading Cards.
Gridiron. Monster with the Gridiron.
Coca-Cola put out, our new sponsor, Coca-Cola, put out Monsters of the Gridiron cards, where it's these... We posted them on our Instagram, so go check them out. It's just these weird looking, like Derek Thomas is dressed like a cast member from Cats for some reason, and like Randall Cunningham, it has like weird like Tin Man garb on.
Well, they take sort of, some of them, so like Emmett Smith is like the cowboy or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they'll take a nickname or a team you play on, and they'll probably dress you up according to what that is. But some of them are a little strange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Ronnie Lott was the Cobra. Yeah. I was like, was he known as the Cobra?
Yeah.
He didn't play for the Cobras. He played for the Eagles.
Cobra Kai.
It's true. It still doesn't make sense.
No, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, you slice it.
But I guess it was a time to do that sort of thing. And that's what made it special is because you didn't see anything like that afterwards.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Like, I mean, today, I mean, if you can go to Walmart, you can go to those, I don't know what you'd call them, like almost call them like those flip book. They have all the posters like in the and you can just go through, and it's either scantily clad women, Marvel characters, John Cena.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's just John Cena. There's no other wrestler. Yeah. It's just John Cena. Or like Mickey and Minnie, or like something just like a random cartoon, SpongeBob, something like that. There's no like football player dressed up in Zubaz pants, or even just a football player, you couldn't find just a Randy Moss poster, just of him standing there with a football or something. Like, that's not
like a book fair poster,
like you can't find that anymore. It's not even around. That's a good point.
Yeah,
I think something too is, in not to generalize, but from a lot of like football documentaries about these players who came up in the late 80s and in the 90s, these flashy players, again, not to generalize, but just going off of just what I know about some of these players, a lot of them grew up impoverished African American kids, so the height of luxury is this flash.
So now
that they're, you know, so to show off any wealth or luxury, it's flash. So things, since a lot of these upcoming African American players are starting to become stars in the NFL, flash is what shows off who they are. It brings attention to them. And, you know, so you get Deion Sanders, like Neon Deion, one of the flashiest players of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can back it up, but it's like, it's the, you know, I'm here, I'm making a statement, here I am, here's all these flashy things that I put on. And that's not a bad thing.
That's
just an explanation on why, like, the 90s really ramped up with, you can call them garish, you can call them kind of revolting looking thing, but that's why there's all this flash and this pomp and the circumstance.
Yeah, and it helped that they were sort of in tune with the fashion at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they sort of were willing to step outside, and it struck a chord with the kids. And you take something like, you mentioned Deion Sanders, and at Falcons games, you see MC Hammer on the sideline.
Right.
Like, you didn't see that kind of stuff, and MC Hammer would like become like, he was like their mascot. You see him in the locker room and stuff like that. So you're starting to integrate sports and pop culture.
Mr. Miyagi.
Mr. Miyagi. All right. Give us the story with that one.
Sorry.
You won't shut up about it.
I don't even think this is... If you're a Green Bay Packers fan, I'm sure you've probably seen this clip at some point. It didn't even happen in the 90s. I think it was like early 2000s.
Yeah. It's still Brett Favre.
But anyway, Brett Favre is just standing on the sidelines, I think. And Pat Morita, for some reason, is at a Packers game. And I think he's a little sloshed.
What am I doing here?
Yeah. But I guess he's a Packers fan. He was on the Packers sideline. And so he comes over and talks to Brett Favre. And then after, like, there's just a clip for some reason that has been circulating for years with any Brett Favre montage that I've seen. And he's just like, hey, how about Mr. Miyagi coming up and talking to me?
wax on, wax off. What a simpleton.
It's just funny. That has nothing to do with anything.
It sort of does, but I'm going to bring it back around. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So what was, I'm curious to know, sorry, not to like interject. But having Jeremy on too is also, because I know from my vantage point, I didn't really start watching football until like the 1999 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because like I was watching baseball and hockey when I was younger. But so any of my knowledge on 90s NFL didn't come from firsthand experience with a lot of stuff. It just came from watching a lot of documentary and NFL films and doing a lot of reading. Yeah. But Jeremy, you were a kid in the 90s and you grew up a Packers fan and you grew up around, you know, in a family who are football fan, or at least you and your dad are football fans.
Yeah.
But like, so you grew up seeing these things and witnessing these things firsthand, like what was, I guess for lack of a better term, like what was it like in your experience witnessing it all as it happened?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I remember a few things, growing up when it comes to football, kind of that were like the first formative things. The first is I remember vaguely, Don Ojkowski getting hurt.
Yeah.
And Brett Favre.
I prayed for this.
Coming in. Yeah. He came in. And my dad is like, Brett Favre, who is this? Because nobody knew how to pronounce his name.
When he got drafted, they're like,
I mean, he knew who
Brett
he was
Favre.
Vaguely. Yeah.
So
I think this is like
1992.
Yeah, it was 92. It was like he vaguely knew who he was. And that's about it. I don't remember the game.
Yeah.
He did come in and they won. But I don't remember any of the game happening. I just remember him getting upset and then Brett Favre coming in and like, that's it. Like I remember him kind of giving me that little blurb. And then fast forward, I actually didn't really start paying attention to football until I think it was 93, 94.
Yeah. I think you remember you telling me about this earlier this week, right? It's like a school project or something.
For some reason we were, well, and I, the reason was, so I grew up in Indiana and we at the time the Colts were a big deal. We were really excited for the Colts. The Colts had just made it to the AFC Championship game. It was the Colts and the Steelers. Excuse me. And then it was the Cowboys and the Packers. And of course my dad was super excited because, you know, the Packers were in it. But like he was, I remember that week we had to draw helmets, football helmets with who we thought was going to win.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, go Colts.
Go Colts, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know who the Colts are.
I don't know who to cheer for.
And they were, I said, who are you cheering for? And they were like, I'm going to root for the Colts. It's the Indianapolis Colts. And I, this is around the same time that I discovered the Pacers. Because I think the year before, this was like I was in fifth grade. The year before I was in fourth grade, and the Pacers had just played the Orlando Magic in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so I was starting to become quite the sports aficionado.
Sports guy. Like a sponge, a sports sponge.
Yeah, I just started realizing that they're kind of cool. And so everybody was rooting for the Colts. And I go home and I was like, Dad, aren't you like kind of like, I felt like I was
he's
breaking.
He's walking Colts.
If anybody knows my dad. That's exactly what it was. I walked in, threw a bunch of blue glitter in the air. And a horse just came over my shoulder, said, nee, and then left. It was fine. My dad,
a blue fart.
If, it, if anybody knows my dad, though, you know that he doesn't care about that. He's not against the Colts, but he doesn't care about the Colts.
Yeah.
And he's a diehard Packers fan. He's loved them for years. Was a big fan of Bart Starr. They were kind of the team. I mean, at the time when he was a fan, the Colts were the Baltimore Colts, so they didn't have a team. So it was like between them and the Chicago Bears, and I think he just liked the Packers more. I think he liked Ray Nitschke more. It was just kind of preference. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I go home and I say, "Dad," and I say it like I'm breaking news to him. Like he doesn't know, but I know because I just did a project on it. "Dad, the playoffs are happening. Who are you going to root for? The Colts, right?" And he looks at me and he says, "No, the Packers."
And I
was like, "But why?"
"Go wash your ass."
And, seriously. And he said, "Well, I've always been a Packers fan." He's like, "I don't root for the Colts." And I was like, "But we live in Indiana." And it was like foreign to me that you could be rooting for some other team. Mm-hmm. That was the first time as a kid I realized, oh, you can choose who you root for. It doesn't have to be your... I know it sounds weird.
You can't choose who you love, though.
Yeah, you cannot choose that. You can't choose that. But
tale as old as time.
I love that horse just blew up and blew glitter.
Goodbye, my love.
Just blew glitter out. But anyway, long story short, the Packers lost, Colts lost. So,
so it doesn't even matter. Yeah.
So you gave up on football until 1997.
Yep.
When they won the Super Bowl.
That's right. The Colts.
The Colts.
No, I'm kidding. No.
The Colts.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I kind of didn't care until, the playoffs again. Until, like, playoffs? Until, like 90, I guess it was 97. Like, because
it took place in 97 for the night. I'll 90, get into
the 96 season, I remember watching one or two games and actually learning the sport a little more. And actually understand, because I didn't understand the whole concept of downs and all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get four tries and all that. So, but anyway, I remember talking to a guy at school. He said he was a huge Patriots fan and has been for years. Yeah, right. Sure, you were. Yeah.
Sure, Jan.
Sure you were. His name was Justin.
Sure.
Justin G. Justin Gingrich. And Justin, if you're out there, keep listening.
Yeah.
But
Justin G sounds like a little YouTuber.
Yeah, it does. But anyway, I remember that he said he was a huge Patriots fan, and I was,
before it was cool to say you were a Patriots fan.
Yeah. So he was the original bandwagoner.
Yeah, exactly.
So, before all the other bandwagoners.
I bleed blood, so.
Yeah. So he had said, you know, he was super confident that they were going to win. And they didn't, which was great for me.
Yeah.
So, and then the next following year, the Packers win again.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was confident that they were going to win. And I was that, I've been upset for games.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember a time of being more embarrassed of being a fan of a team.
Yeah.
Because I had to go and face Justin Gingrich because I told him that they were going to win. I was like, yeah, right. They're going to win. I'm going to mop the floor. Make a bridge. Get over it. I was just like spouting off about it. And boy, my head was hanging low when I came back in.
Justin Gingrich, who is now a Broncos fan.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I've always been a Broncos fan.
Okay. Can me. Elway all the way.
Yeah.
All right, Justin.
So you probably, thus the origins of your love
for
football.
Yeah, sorry, that was a long story.
No. I mean, it kind of puts into perspective that you've seen, like, the Zubaz and these posters and all
that. Oh, yeah. I got to, it's funny, like, a lot of those games growing up that I really remember. There are some really awful memories, but some really great ones too. Awful from the standpoint of the game, not like, man, that was the day I got beat up. Like, that's not what I mean.
Justin Gingrich took it a step further and just beat the shit out of me.
That was the day I got hot soup poured in my lap.
The scars are not, they're not ever going to go away.
Yep. Yeah. It looks like a Ken doll down there now.
So now that you're starting to watch football, you mentioned Monday Night Football earlier. Huge. Just because of, if only for Hank Williams Jr.'s theme song. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know of anyone that when you mention Monday Night Football, doesn't at least know, oh, you're ready for some football.
Ooh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
that presentation, and then Fox NFL Sunday.
Yes.
Bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum, bum. Like, it's just, yeah. it's the, I mean, they do that now.
Right.
But there's just something different about the aesthetic, and I think they had, like, the fighting robots and stuff, and they used to do...
Fox was the channel to watch it on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to watch your sport. You wanted to watch your football specifically, your NFL football on Fox if possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they would do like promo videos for each team, and they would be catered to the theme of that team. Yeah. If that makes sense. So like if it's the Cowboys and the Patriots, you'd probably be like 100 years ago.
Oh yeah,
you know, and
they do like a movie trailer.
It'd show like Revolutionary War reenactments or whatever. And then you go to the Cowboys, you get like maybe the sound of Spurs walking on the range or whatever. And then they would show like clips from games for those two teams and stuff. And maybe on Thanksgiving they would show like a pilgrim promo or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just I mentioned theatrical before. It just seemed like it became a bigger deal.
Kind of set the tone, you know. I think Fox, and we'll get into it more with hockey when we sit down with our older brother and talk hockey. But Fox anyway was an edgier network channel.
Yeah.
So Fox was like the '90s. In the '90s, you could get test the waters with kind of more creative things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you had they had my favorite analyst team. Mm. I mean, it had James Brown, not the singer, the sports analyst. Howie Long, Terry Bradshaw, and Jimmy Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really liked them growing up. Like they were kind of the definitive ones for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now I kind of don't care. I actually prefer probably ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Sure. ABC
or
John Madden, Pat Summerall or Al Michaels.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time that was great. Now it's Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I miss John Madden.
Yeah.
I miss John Madden. John Madden is one of those voices that everybody gives him crap for saying things that are obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boom. And you get hit. That's when it hurts. It's like, oh, you throw the ball and you pass it and then you catch it. And
I think that's going to leave a mark.
Yeah. It's almost like, yours was better.
Yours was good. His was better.
Yeah. But I loved John Madden. There's something just comforting and nostalgic about John Madden calling a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That I just love. And everybody's like, oh, man, he had this thing for Brett Favre. It's like, all announcers have their favorites.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think John Madden knew Brett Favre. Like, they had talked and, like,
he was this gung-ho gunslinger.
He just liked him. And you know, for a long time, what was not to like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then he kind of changed a little bit, but
but
before that, like, I mean, Brett Favre was kind of the sweetheart of the NFL for a long time, which was kind of great as a Packers fan.
Yeah,
That's, I mean, to have someone on your team that was kind of beloved for the most part.
Right.
I mean, in Chicago, everyone hated him.
Right.
But it was because Chicago sucked for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now they lost yesterday, so they might suck this year, but I don't know. Their defense is amazing, but that's kind of always been their calling card.
For sure.
So I think, really, as far as the 90s go, I mean, the announcing by those two, by Al Michaels and John Madden, was about as quintessential as anything.
That made the experience almost as much as the game and the players. And speaking of players, like you've name-dropped Brett Favre a few times, and he's important to this decade for the reason I'm about to bring up.
Absolutely.
So part of the marketing was the players, and we've alluded to it, but the 90s in general had some of the most prolific athletes and like the most iconic athletes, and football's there's no exception. Like there are so many transcendent talents that came out of the NFL in the 90s. A lot of them started in the 90s and ended in the 90s, but their impact was so indelible that they're forever, like, they've built Hall of Fame careers on like 6 or 7 years in one.
And they'll be remembered forever.
And they'll be remembered.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I printed out while doing some research today, as selected by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there is the all decade team for the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to go through and list off who they selected. And then maybe we can go through and name drop some other players that maybe weren't included.
Absolutely.
So for their quarterbacks, they have John. So first team is John Elway for the Broncos.
Yeah.
Second team is Dan Marino. Or no, sorry, Brett Favre.
Yeah.
I had Dan Marino on the brain because I was surprised Dan Marino wasn't in there.
Yeah.
You know, your Dan Marinos. I think some honorable mentions would probably be Dan Marino, Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly, absolutely. Four Super Bowls.
Yeah. What's tough about guys like Dan Marino and John Elway, they split a lot of their legendary stats between the 80s and the 90s.
And that's the thing. But someone like Troy Aikman didn't. Like, he literally played from 89 to, like, 99.
Or Steve Young.
Or Steve Young. Yeah. Like, they were purely, in my head, when I think of Steve Young, I think of those, like, burnt red 49ers jerseys and him, like, slinging left-handed passes or, like, who did I say? Troy Aikman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like those Cowboys uniforms, like Cowboys and 49ers battling it out. So I think those are some pretty strong honorable mentions.
Yeah.
That one I'm sure was really hard for people to come to consensus on.
Was that just AFC or was that in the NFL?
That's just period. NFL. Period.
Wow.
So I'm surprised.
So Brett Favre wasn't even on there.
Brett Favre is part of the second team.
Oh, he's second team.
What might have put him over?
It's like all pros. They have a first team.
Crazy is I'm thinking what might have put him over is he had the most touchdowns in the 90s. He tossed the most touchdowns in the 90s. But then again, Troy Aikman had like 3 Super Bowls. Young had 2 Super Bowls.
And he won every single time he went.
Mm-hmm. I'm sincerely surprised that because here's the thing. There was overlap with Brett Favre in the 90s and the 2000s.
Right.
Yeah.
So I could see the case being made of, you know, okay, we won't have Brett Favre here for the 90s, but we can have him in the 2000s. Maybe like Peyton Manning and Brett Favre. But I guess then you'd still get into the Tom Brady argument. I'm just trying to think of a way that they could clear some space for Dan Marino. But like you said, he started in 84. So he split his stats, but so did John Elway.
I think John Elway's stats, though, was kind of the reverse of Dan Marino. John Elway threw for 20,000 plus yards in the 80s, but threw for 30,000 in the 90s.
I think it was how his career ended, too. He won two Super Bowls.
Well, and there's even a little bit of overlap, too, with Joe Montana. I mean, he played for 4 or 5 years? 5 years,
in the 90s?
From 90 to 94.
Yeah.
I mean,
because the last year
he was with the Chiefs.
Yeah, the Chiefs made it to the playoffs in 94.
Yeah.
With Joe Montana. So, yeah, he had a bit of a resurgence.
He made the Pro Bowl 90 and 93.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was still playing at a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's not on the all-decade team.
Yeah.
But it's hard because sometimes you're just thinking, you're like, oh, man, like, some of these players, they just play forever.
Yeah,
just play for such a long time.
Put Brett Favre over as he was the first player to win 3 MVPs.
Yeah,
so absolutely.
I think because
you
look at Troy Aikman and Steve Young, who are Hall of Famers, but they went on the strength of a good team, and so did Brett Favre. But Brett Favre, as an individual, rose above the team enough to where like he had 3 MVPs.
Yeah. And that again, like you could make a case for Dan Marino. And that's what's so tough. And like you said, I can't imagine that was an easy decision.
Right.
So moving on,
well, we've 3 consecutive MVPs too, which is really hard to do.
Yeah, that's true. But moving on from quarterbacks to running backs. So on the first team and the second team, they did 2 running backs.
Yeah.
And so first team is Barry Sanders.
My favorite running back. I love
Emmitt
Barry
Smith.
Sanders.
Oh, man.
If Barry Sanders had the career like length that Emmitt Smith did, he would have obliterated every rushing record.
Yeah, I would say he is the best rusher of the football ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
regardless.
Considering, I mean, the only thing anybody would hang over him is like two failed playoff. I think it was he had 1 playoff appearance. One or 2 failed playoff appearances like in the wild card game. And his he didn't have a Super Bowl, but considering his offensive line, if you watch highlight videos of Barry Sanders,
it's unbelievable.
How many of those is he losing yards and then gaining them back? And like the way he averted defenses, he's next to Walter Payton, he's the smoothest runner I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
10 seasons and has 10 1,000-yard seasons.
Yeah.
It is unreal. Unheard
That's
of.
Unheard of.
It's like he and Jim Brown, he and Jim Brown have the most average yards per game of all time.
Yep.
Barry Sanders averaged 100 yards a game over 10 years. Jim Brown's the only one that has more. That's like 102.
I don't think anybody does that anymore. Like I can't remember the last running back.
Yeah.
Maybe Adrian Peterson that got close.
Right.
But
well, in order to get your average to 100, you have to have a lot of 200 yard games.
And you have to have an offensive line that is helping you out. But how many pockets did Barry Sanders find himself?
Yeah. Right.
And speaking of offensive line, Emmett Smith was the second choice for the first team. Not diminishing his ability as a runner, but I feel like he was the beneficiary of a very good offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
And a very good team around him.
Yeah.
So I always say, as I like Emmett Smith, he's one of my favorite cameos in Little Giants.
Yeah.
But, but
not as a player, but as a cameo.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying, every time people bring up Emmett Smith breaking the record, I have to say the caveat is it's because Barry Sanders retired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Barry Sanders was 1,500 yards away.
Well, to contrast, Barry Sanders averaged 5 yards a carry for his career.
Yeah.
To average, I mean, it's one thing to get all those yards and to, you know, you get a bunch of touches.
Yeah.
He averaged 5 yards. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, compare it to Jerome Bettis. And Jerome Bettis, who, let me tell you, the first time I saw Jerome Bettis, I was like, oh, is that one of the defensive linemen?
He's a
big
guy. I was
like, oh my gosh. Like, well, I didn't realize that you could have that gut and be a running back. And the thing is, the guy's fast.
He's fast.
He's fast swift. And he's huge. Mm-hmm. Like, to be that fast and that quick and have that girth.
Yeah.
Is craziness.
Nuts.
But to kind of put it in perspective, Jerome Bettis averaged 3.9 yards. He had only a couple thousand yards rushing less than Barry Sanders, just about 2,000 yards or so less. And he averaged like a full yard less than him. And he had just had a ton of touches, which just says to me that it's like he had, I mean, if you're averaging that much less, he's going to have way more touches to get to that yardage total.
Yeah, for sure.
So it just makes what Barry Sanders did all the more impressive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And let alone, I mean, Jerome Bettis is a truck.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't call him the bus for nothing. That guy could probably carry half the defensive line on his back and he'd still make it like to the end zone. He's huge.
They call him the bus because he's afraid to fly.
Yeah, that's right.
that's from the office. Yeah.
So all that to say, I think they got the first team right.
Yeah.
Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith.
Yeah.
Second team is Thurman Thomas and Terrell Davis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I'll go with
production
that.
From the beginning of the 90s and then production from the end of the 90s.
Right. Thurman Thomas always flew under the radar for me. But if you look at his numbers, especially like he is the backbone of the, I mean, you could argue he's the backbone of those four Buffalo Bills Super Bowl appearance teams.
Curtis Martin got his start during this
time
period.
If you want to talk about window, so like Terrell Davis only played 7 seasons and he was only productive in 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that with those numbers in mind and he's in the Hall of Fame is crazy. The he only started producing from the mid 90s to the end of the decade.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he's on this all decade team is unbelievable. But that at the same time, if you're looking at a production standpoint, you could also throw Curtis Martin in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it's the fact that Terrell Davis was a Super Bowl MVP.
Right.
And he had a 2,000-yard season, which is amazing. But you could throw Curtis Martin in there. You could throw Jerome Bettis in there. You brought up Jerome Bettis.
Curtis Martin, the first 5 years, so 95 to 99, his lowest rushing total, 1,152.
Jeez Louise.
That's his lowest.
That's nuts production.
Yeah.
So those were the second team running backs, the wide receivers. The first team, again, has two wide receivers, Jerry Rice and Chris Carter.
Yeah.
I think I'm fine with that.
I think that's fine.
Jerry Rice is another one of those two-decade transcendent
But he dominated in both decades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even in the early 2000s, he contributed with the second team receiver, Tim Brown and Michael Irvin.
He was going to be my other choice. I was going to say Tim Brown was just a beast.
Yeah.
That guy, he was such an under-the-radar guy.
Very under-the-radar.
Like, gosh, like, he just did his business. Like, you never heard Tim Brown highlights as much. Like, he was productive. All the guy did was get yardage and score. Like, he was just a touchdown machine and was very, very, very productive. Had, like, some of the best hands.
Oh, yeah.
And so consistent year after year after year. No, he never wore gloves. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was one of the only receivers. Well, I shouldn't say one of the only, but he was a receiver that never wore gloves, which is pretty much standard practice nowadays.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
But it's awesome.
Yeah. And plus he spent pretty much his entire career with the Raiders.
Yeah.
But you don't get that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very rare for one person to stay with one team.
So I agree with those receivers. I would also throw Andre Reed in there.
Andre Reed, Isaac Bruce, I would throw in there. Maybe Jimmy Smith. Not Jimmy Smith because I like Jimmy Smith, but Jimmy Smith because from a productivity level.
We were talking about this on the way over here. It's tough because Jimmy Smith also had that 98 Jaguars team was really, really good.
Yeah.
So it's tough. I think the argument was like naming him a time capsule player when he had 1,000-yard receiving seasons in the 2000s, but Jimmy Smith is tough. Sterling Sharp also.
I think that's the thing, and after this we'll get into time capsule players and I'll kind of explain what that is. Mm-hmm. But Sterling Sharp keeps going back and forth for me with, you know, decade not like a superstar of the decade or like a time capsule player because he didn't play for that long. But I think just for the fact that you have Terrell Davis in there for such a small window of productivity and he's in the Hall of Fame, I think Sterling Sharp should go in the Hall of Fame.
If you don't have Terrell Davis in the Hall of Fame, then it's a no-brainer. Okay, then keep him out of the Hall.
Yeah.
But because you've made... Well, and because I would say almost Terrell Davis and someone like Kurt Warner, who also had basically two careers.
Yeah. Right.
He had one with
Stock
the Rams.
Boy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And a quarterback,
right? No.
Barnstormers,
Piggly Wiggly. Now he basically had a great 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years with the Rams, and then had like a super sharp decline for about 3-4 years.
Yeah,
then shot back up with the Cardinals for about 3 years.
Yeah,
and his numbers are low compared to all other quarterbacks, but because he went to two Super Bowls, I think that's a large
three Super
part of
Bowls.
It.
He went to three. Two with the Rams.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting that second one. Yeah. You're right. They lost to the Patriots.
Yep.
I think it's because, like, I mean, it's kind of the Jim Kelly thing, even though Jim Kelly has way more productivity. He went to four Super Bowls, didn't win any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because Kurt Warner led his team to three, I mean, you kind of have to let him. It's like Eli Manning.
Yeah.
Eli Manning is going to go in the Hall of Fame because he went to two Super Bowls. Now, he has the productivity now.
Yeah, right.
Like, he's actually has broken several records, climbed a lot of the charts.
Yeah.
But 4 years ago, 5 years ago, Eli was a fringe Hall of Fame player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you let Joe Flacco in?
Yeah.
Right.
He won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you make the exception if we're talking about, like, truncated careers.
Right.
And, like, productivity only for 3 or 4 years, like, why not Sterling Sharp if you're going to put in Kurt Warner and Terrell Davis?
Yeah. Terrell Davis, Super Bowl MVP. That's probably the only reason you give it to. I mean, he won two Super Bowls, but he didn't win the Super Bowls by himself.
And
like,
I love Terrell Davis.
Yeah.
So do I. He's great. Yeah. But I think if he's in, then you have to look at Sterling Sharp's numbers.
Mm-hmm. I think that's video game rationalization to induct someone to the Hall of Fame after 4 years of productivity.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I just think that's, it sounds absurd.
Right.
But they're a little lax on the rules. So
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, as long as we're talking about a Sharp, moving on from Sterling Sharp to Shannon Sharp. Man. He is a first team all decade tight end.
I agree with that.
Second team is, we were talking about Tim Brown being under the radar. Ben Coates is the second team tight end for the Patriots. Ben Coates.
Time capsule.
You want to talk about Gronk? Ben Coates was the precursor to Gronk in New England.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, super, super productive tight end. Great, you know, anchor for that offense for mm-hmm. Drew Bledsoe. Provided a nice big target.
He's a good
for
blocker,
him.
Too.
Good blocker, mm-hmm. very reliable. So I completely agree with that. I would even throw Mark Chimura in there for the Packers, even though he's kind of a skeez.
He's
ball.
Kind of a skeez.
In terms of on the field antics, the tight end pool might be a little thin.
Mm-hmm.
When did Tony Gonzalez start?
That's a late 90s.
It was about 98, I think, was when he was drafted.
Yeah. Since the pool is so thin, you might even throw like a Tony Gonzalez in there with Mark Chimura. But that's pushing it a little bit.
I think the choices
were good.
I think the direction they went is fine, especially since there's not a whole lot of selection.
I was drafted in 97, so.
Maybe Jay Novacek.
Yeah. But maybe. I think. We'll blast through the offensive line and the defense because I think they nailed it. Like I don't think I have much more to say. So as we're running through, if you think of any input, feel free to jump in.
Can I add one player that not to running back, but it should be kind of hand in hand for fullback?
Yeah.
There's one name that I think of during
Tony
the
Richardson.
90s. No,
Mike
not
Allstott.
To Mike Allstott.
Oh, of course.
Mike Allstott.
How could I forget the age?
Now, he's 1996 was when he was drafted, but
he was basically their running
name
back.
Was synonymous. I remember him and Warrick Dunn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Packers would always play them, and they would always have trouble.
Yeah.
Because Mike Allstott was a beast because
I
he was
love
a
Mike
he
Allstott.
Would blow you up as a blocker. And he would spring work done for like a 30-yard gain,
mm-hmm.
or he could just take it by himself. Like, they'd get to the goal line, and he'd run it in every – you can't
He's
stop the
unbelievable.
Man. He's huge.
So good.
He was a beast.
It's not just Mike the pads Allstott. Either. He wore larger pads than everybody else as well.
He did. He looked imposing. That guy was terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, like I said,
good
we'll
player.
Just – totally. Mm-hmm. I love Mike Allstott.
Me too.
If you wouldn't have said anything, I would have completely forgot about him, which is – a damn shame.
No.
Because he's such a great player.
He was a great player. I love that guy.
But like I said, I don't have any qualms with who they have for offensive line and defense. So first team tackle, you got Willie Rofe and Gary Zimmerman.
Yeah.
And then second team is Tony Baselli and Richmond Webb.
Tony Baselli did make it.
Yeah, there
it's
you go.
Well, it's nice to hear that he was Jacksonville's first ever draft pick.
Yep.
It's nice to see that he had a solid career.
Yep.
Yeah.
So did. At guard for
no
the first
Tony Mandarich?
No,
sorry,
the
pal.
So for guard, you've got Bruce Matthews on the first team, and who else do they have? Bruce McAdoo and Randall McDaniel from the Vikings is on the first team as well. Second team is Larry Allen for the
Cowboys.
Almost said Stars, and then Steve Wisniewski. For the Raiders. I was on the second team. And then at center, first team is Dermonte Dawson from the Steelers. And the second team is Mark Stubnoski from the Cowboys and the Oilers. So
real quick, just to kind of, because I was thinking of to go back to Bruce Matthews a second ago.
Yeah.
He was kind of, gosh, he's so good. I remember because he was on the Oilers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I remember his name being, like, as a kid, I remember him every once in a while. I mean, the Packers didn't play them regularly, but I just remember his name every once in a while being put. And the reason why is I would look at the Pro Bowl thing year after year, see who was voted, and I would keep seeing this name.
Bruce Matthews.
Like, who is this guy? Like, for years. And to give you something, like, so he played guard, center, tackle, and snapper.
This guy
could play everything.
No, offensive line doesn't get enough love.
And so he came into the league 83 to 2001. That's how long he played.
As a guard.
Yeah. He made the Pro Bowl from 88 to 2001. From 88 to 2001, he went 14 straight Pro Bowls. That's unheard of.
That's not like kicking or punting. He's a guard.
That's an offensive lineman. He's in the trenches. Nobody has done that as a guard, center, tackle, whatever.
Yep.
Like we looked up Joe Thomas today.
Oh,
Joe Thomas, who's not a 90s player but a 2000s player, best left tackle in the league for years, played for 10 years.
Yeah, for the Cleveland Browns.
Made it 10 years. Made the Pro Bowl 10 years. Still not as much.
First
this guy made 14.
He had like seven first team all pros.
Yeah.
Like, that's unbelievable. Yeah. So on defense, defensive ends for the first team, Bruce Smith and Reggie White.
Yeah.
Minister of Defense. What was his name? I mean, it's
love Reggie White.
Like, he especially in that Super Bowl team, like Reggie White was like so beloved by the people of Green Bay.
He never went into the weight room, never lifted a weight. He was a beast. For a guy to never have to work out like that.
Oh no, God gives me my powers.
Seriously. That guy was just a strong man. Like that is just good genetics there.
I just want a strong
give me one of them strong boys.
Somebody say strong boy.
Hey, I'll be strong boy.
Plus Bruce Smith.
Hey, can I play?
Bruce Smith. Scary guy.
Yeah, he is.
He crushed the football in Little Giants.
Yeah.
Yep.
Second team.
Awesome player, dominating player.
The sack record for actual sacks, not that stupid little sack Michael Strahan
got.
Yeah, on Brett on Favre. Break the record.
Like, no, yeah. Bruce Smith was like the standard for years.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Second team defensive end, Chris Dolman,
the
Vikings, Falcons, 49ers, and Neil Smith, the Chiefs and the Broncos. Defensive tackle, first team, Cortez Kennedy from the Seahawks, and John Randall from the Vikings.
John Randall.
He throws on that eye black and starts talking trash to you. You're like, you can get through, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Second team, Warren Sapp for the Bucks, and Bryant Young for the 49ers.
I never liked Warren Sapp.
Me neither.
But I loved playing him and beating him.
Mm. He wore goofy pants and had a fat ass.
That was the thing with Warren Sapp, though, is because I hated playing him on the Bucks because Mike Allstott, work done.
Yeah.
I hated it because I was like,
Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks.
Derek Brooks, man. Derek Brooks is a good player. He's a great player.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He's not on here, but for linebacker, they have Junior Seau for the Chargers.
Yep.
He wasn't on there?
Mm-mm. Hardy Nickerson and Junior Seau.
Oh, man. Junior Seau was great. Hardy Nickerson was great.
And then other...
Junior Seau's on here.
No. Yeah, he is. I was talking about Derek Brooks.
Oh, Derek Brooks. Sorry.
I thought you said Junior Seau wasn't on there.
Sentence ran together.
Yeah.
I thought it was...
So actually, the first team linebackers are Junior Seau, Derek Thomas from the Chiefs.
I love Derek Thomas.
And Kevin Green.
Kevin Green.
You would know Kevin Green if you saw... I mean, I know you guys know who Kevin Green is.
Yeah.
But he's someone you would recognize.
Absolutely.
But no one ever talks about him.
Oh, no.
He was destructive.
Yeah,
he was.
Plus, he had a little mini career in world championship wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
With Steve Mongo McMichael.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I share my first memory of Kevin Green?
Yeah.
I remember a big game coming up. Packers, Carolina Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like the second year maybe the Panthers were in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kevin Green was their starter.
Oh, yeah.
At linebacker. And he was a big man.
Yeah.
He was just talking some trash before the game. And I was like, boy, I hope
you?
He does. No, not to me.
Oh, okay.
But no, just to the cameras.
Yeah.
Like they were just filming it. It was just kind of one of those promo things that they do before the game. And I think he was just kind of messing around. But I was like, boy, I hope Brett Favre doesn't get hurt.
Please take care of him.
I was genuinely concerned. And then I realized
the gravity of that statement. Yeah. Please don't let Brett Favre get hurt. You watch this big guy. He's got long angel hair looking blonde hair with like a really like breezy blonde mustache.
What about that, you Mississippi mud butt?
And like he's yelling at the cameras, like, please don't hurt Brett Favre.
Please don't hurt him.
Please don't hurt him.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just kind of comical.
I love Kevin
Green.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He was funny thing, he became Green Bay's outside linebackers coach years and taught Clay Matthews.
Nice. Interesting.
There is a
Bruce Matthews' son or nephew.
It's his nephew.
Yeah. But Clay Matthews' dad did play. Dominic Matthews.
Yeah, but there's a famous soundbite from the Super Bowl where Kevin Green is talking to Clay Matthews, and he says, look, we need something to happen. Says, it is time. They need a player. They need you to step up. They need a leader. And he says, it is time. It is time. Next play, Clay Matthews, he goes out there, causes a fumble, and they get the fumble from Rashard Mendenhall.
Yeah.
Packers recover. We score a touchdown off it.
Nice.
I love that sound bite. Awesome. It's awesome. Kevin Green, baby.
Kevin Green, baby. Dom Beebe, baby.
So second team is Hardy Nickerson, Steelers and the Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm. There's things I keep remembering.
No, that's okay.
One of the things I remember from Hardy Nickerson, there's also a really good little clip, if you ever get a chance to watch it on YouTube, of Hardy Nickerson basically telling, he tells one of his other teammates, he says, okay, I'm going to stand this guy up in the box and you just rip the ball out. And he does it. He just stands him up. He's like, okay, he's going to come right to me. He's like, he knows exactly what play is coming. Yeah. He says, I'm going to stand him up and you just rip the ball out. He stands him up. Sure enough.
Rips the ball
out. And his teammate comes up, just takes the ball away. Yeah. It's like, how can you? It's hard to call your shot in the NBA. Yeah. How much harder in the NFL is it to call your shot?
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly. So Hardy Nickerson, Cornelius Bennett from the Bills, Falcons, and Colts, and then LaVon Kirkland from the Steelers.
Yep.
Before I go further, I would also throw, for the defensive players, I would throw Pat Swilling out there from the Saints, Jesse Tuggle from the Falcons, and Zach Thomas.
Isaiah Thomas. Smiling Isaiah Thomas. Yeah. Zach Thomas. I love Zach Thomas, too.
Jesse Tuggle was dominant. Yeah. Like, I was looking at, like, league leaders for every, like, offensive and defensive category. Mm-hmm. And he was usually, at least in the early 90s to the mid-90s, was usually at the top of the list for tackles. Mm-hmm. Jesse Tuggle was. So was Pat. Pat Swilling was usually at the top for, like, sacks and stuff like that.
Yes, yes.
And so for cornerbacks, first-team cornerbacks, Deion Sanders and Rod Woodson.
I mean,
you can't get much more of a dream team than that. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's
Deion
one,
Sanders
two.
Was the poster boy for 90s football.
Yeah. Rod Woodson is the Jerry Rice to Deion Sanders, Terrell Owens.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just went about his business, didn't make any splashes. Leeds, I think, has the all-time interceptions, or is at least second, maybe.
Rod Woodson. I think so.
For interceptions, if he's not first, he's second.
Speaking of going about his business, second team is Darryl Green.
Yeah.
And Aeneas Williams.
Yeah. Oh, Aeneas Williams. Yeah.
So Darryl Green.
Did he come to your church?
Yeah. And he didn't read from the Bible once.
Well, the only Bible verse he said was
where his name came
from. A reference
from.
To the name Aeneas. Yeah. That's it. And he got a standing ovation. And like at the time I stood up because I watched Aeneas Williams for the Cardinals and for the Rams.
Yeah.
And then Jeff was sitting down. I was like, what's up? He's like, I don't stand for our pastor. I'm not going to stand for him. I'm like, fair enough.
Yeah, exactly.
At the time, I was like, huh? But I was like, makes sense.
I guess so.
But Darryl Green played 20-plus years all for the Redskins. And was just this incredible leader and great, great at his position.
Iron Man,
for sure. Mm-hmm. So Darryl Green and Aeneas Williams on the second team. Safety, one guy. First team safety, someone who doesn't get talked about enough, Steve Atwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Broncos and the Jets.
Yeah.
And then Leroy Butler for the Packers.
Oh, Leroy Butler made it?
Yeah. First team.
Oh, I love
first
it.
Team safety.
Oh, I love it.
And so
I love Leroy Butler.
Second team is Carnell Lake, the Steelers and Jaguars.
First person to do Lambeau Leap. Leroy
Butler.
Leroy
Butler. Nice.
Yeah, baby.
That's awesome. Sorry. And then Ronnie Lott.
Tough
pick. Ronnie Lott. 90s.
Yeah. He's gotta be
second team safety.
He's one of the toughest SOBs ever.
Ronnie Lott,
yes.
Like, he murdered people. He'd like,
blow people
they
up.
They created the free safety position for him.
Pretty much.
And also the only player that I've ever heard of that cut off part of his finger to avoid missing game time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
he's nuts. The Cobra.
He's kind of crazy.
The Cobra.
Cobra, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Special teams, kicker, Morton Anderson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then second team, Gary Anderson. I feel like they could have...
I said that like I was so in...
Yeah.
Well...
Yeah. Morton Anderson,
I feel like Gary Anderson would have swapped it had he hit that field goal in the NFC Championship in 1998.
Eight.
The soft spot for Scott Norwood.
Oh,
I want to give a shout out to Scott Norwood.
Poor guy. Yeah. Like, if you watch Four Falls of Buffalo...
He is a good kicker.
Yeah.
He just happened to miss one. Look, man, he was a good kicker.
Yep. It's, I mean, what
anybody else says.
Same thing with Gary. I mean, not as big of a stage as Scott Norwood, but I'm sure Gary Anderson is going through the same stuff. A guy who never missed a field goal in the biggest, potentially the biggest game in the Vikings history, and he missed, shanked the field goal inside. So that's what sucks even more.
Yeah.
Also, sidebar: two of my least favorite kickers, Bill and Martin Gramatica.
There you go. They hurt themselves celebrating.
Yeah. Pipsqueaks.
Yeah,
God does have a plan for us.
Exactly. And so punters, Darren Bennett for the Chargers and Sean Landetta. Those guys played forever.
I remember always seeing Sean Landetta's name on the Madden games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kick returners, Michael Bates, who played for the Seahawks, Browns, Panthers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then second team, Mel Gray, played for the Lions, the Oilers, and the Eagles.
Yeah, those guys could fly.
And then, and punt returners, a no-brainer, Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Mel Gray is second team. Mm-hmm. And so for the coaching position, first team is Bill Parcells.
Yep.
Head coach.
Yep.
And then second team is Marv Levy.
Yep.
The Bills. And so that was the all-decade team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked they have Mark Levy on there.
Yeah.
Because they never won the big game.
That's probably why.
But he went to four straight Super Bowls.
That's probably
why
Parcells is over Marv Levy.
Right.
Parcells won that Super Bowl against the Bills, and Marv Levy never won a Super Bowl.
I'm surprised Jimmy Johnson isn't.
Yeah, I would have thought they put Jimmy Johnson in there over Parcells because, well, I guess Jimmy Johnson won one, and Barry Switzer won the other one.
For the Cowboys?
For the Cowboys, yeah.
I thought Jimmy Johnson won at least two of them.
Did he win two?
Jimmy Johnson won one. I thought Barry Switzer won the other one.
I'll look it up real quick.
Yeah, but all of that to say, that was the all-decade team, and those were the icons of this decade. And now we're going to move on to players who I refer to as time capsule players, and this applied to baseball, this applies here, and this applies to the other sports we're going to cover. And how I define a time capsule player is... So you've got your superstars that dominated a significant part of a decade. Then you've got your time capsule guys who we're going to be talking about now who had a very small window in the decade that they were amongst the leaders in particular statistical categories. So you have guys like Jerry Rice who dominated the decade, Barry Sanders, guys we just talked about. And then you've got the guys that – you might have had on a poster like Kurt Warner in 1993, but beyond 1993,
right.
You don't know anything else he did. So hence the title of Time Capsule.
Yeah.
It's very indicative of that decade.
Mm-hmm.
So with that small window in mind, I'm just going to roll through guys who I refer to as Time Capsule players, and I'm sure I'm going to get some agreement from you guys. So Jim Everett, to me, is a Time Capsule player.
Yeah. Chris.
Chris, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jim Rome.
Jim Rome.
Oh, man.
Shit disturber.
Yeah, he didn't deserve that.
No. Ricky Waters.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this not diminish their talent as players, but in terms of productivity, they were amongst league leaders for a very small amount of time in a decade. Mark Brunell. Steven and I debated this one on the way home.
Yeah.
On the way here.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I refer to Mark Brunell as a time capsule guy because in the 90s, he had a window of about 3 years to where he was amongst the best in passing yards and like off in touchdowns and led the Jaguars to AFC championships and stuff.
And the only argument I had against that was in 2001 and 2005, he had...
3,500 yards.
Yeah, like he stagnated, but then in those 2 years he had his like his numbers in the 90s. Yeah. So he had at least 2 years in the 2000s to where he was productive.
Yeah, the most significant years, I think, were late 90s, where he was,
right,
as I call it, playing with the big boys. Yeah. Like, he was there up there with the Favs and the Elways.
We know what's strange is back then, like 3,500 yards passing. That was a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, breaking 4,000, if you don't break 4,000, it's like,
wasn't a successful season.
Yeah, you must not do. I mean, because you have people like Drew Brees going into the 5,000-yard category. It's like, nobody should ever be doing that. Mm-hmm. But that's not to tear Drew Brees down. I'm just saying it's absurd. Like, that's a ton of yards to throw in the air.
Yeah.
It's just back then, they just ran more. There's like maybe 5-6 running backs in the league now that can handle that.
Yeah.
Everything else is by committee.
Yeah.
Or you throw it all the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mark Brunell fits. I think there's arguments for both.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I would probably put him. I'd probably lean more towards Time Capsule.
Yeah.
Because he was good for a very short amount of.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say very short. For a very specific amount of time.
Yeah. Same with Andre Rison, who I have on here as a Time Capsule guy.
Oh, I had Moon Rison.
I have Terrell Davis as a Time Capsule guy, and he's one of those that it's there reaches a point to where the definition becomes very liquid.
Yeah,
the qualifications become very liquid because, like we said, he's on the All Decade team, but he only produced for 4 years. So the late 90s. Is the most associated with Terrell Davis. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily say he dominated a decade. He dominated that short stretch of time.
Right.
So that's where the lines start to blur and it starts to become liquid, like I said. So I refer to Terrell Davis and Sterling Sharp as Time Capsule players.
And I think it fits both of them.
Yeah.
I think that Terrell Davis, in spite of being in the Hall of Fame, like I said, was, like we talked about this earlier, was just a beneficiary of some really timely achievements.
Yeah.
Super Bowl MVP, won the Super Bowl twice.
Yeah.
Had a 2,000-yard season.
Yeah.
It just all happened really quickly.
Right.
So because of that, had we been talking about the NBA in the 90s and Penny Hardaway, and Penny Hardaway had won the NBA finals and been the finals MVP and then, been the scoring leader for that year, he'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of moving through again, Ray Buchanan.
Yeah.
Ray Buchanan, Natrone Means.
Natrone Means Business.
Natrone Means Business. I got two 1,000-yard seasons in me, and that's about
and
it.
And that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember him for the name Natrone.
Natrone is very,
Dave Krieg for the Seahawks, they weren't any good, so he never got any love. But in the early 90s, he was constantly in the top 10, like passing yards and stuff.
Yep.
Jeff George.
Jeff George.
Gunslinger. I'm Jeff George.
All the talent in the world. $1 million arm, 10-cent head.
Yeah.
Like, that's
speaking of $1 million arm, we didn't bring him up when we were talking about players who could be considered for quarterbacks of the 90s, but Warren Moon.
Warren Moon, he was great.
So hey, Warren Moon.
And going back to I don't know if you guys had said it for running backs, we didn't even think about it. Marshall Faulk.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how we didn't bring up Marshall
Faulk.
Faulk
was great. Colts.
I did think of Marshall Faulk. And I guess you could qualify the 90s as a dominant time, but I think of him more as a 2000s player.
He really hit his stride with the Rams, but I remember him being a big play. I mean, he's very, very popular.
He was great for the Colts.
In Indy, he did great for them. And I remember that trade, once he went to the Rams, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I think he really became that dual threat.
Oh, yeah.
Much more so.
I love Misha Marshall
when he went to the Rams. Oh, yeah, he's great. He's great. He's every bit of a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
So Herman Moore from the Lions. Yeah. Randall Cunningham, as much as I like him, he's very much a...
He's a time capsule
player. He's stuck in the 90s.
Yeah.
He didn't really dominate the decade.
No, he was a good player. He was solid.
Yeah.
He's a good player, as much as you may want to say, well, he's fringe Hall of Famer. He's just right there.
Yeah.
He'll never get into the Hall of Fame, but he was a good player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
He was. Not everybody can go into the Hall.
Yeah. I hesitate with this one, but I put Drew Bledsoe as a time capsule player.
Yeah.
I mean, that one, that's another liquid fringe one.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, honestly, he was a middle of the road quarterback. He had,
right.
You know, he took him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 96 team to the 97 yeah. Super Bowl. And, you know, he was productive, but then after 2001, it was a Tom Brady show.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah.
I think,
in the 90s.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see much of Drew Bledsoe in prominence after the 90s.
Yeah. So I guess so if that's the case, I would actually throw him into consideration for, because he did, from like 93 to the end of the decade, he was a pretty prevalent quarterback. So instead of putting him in a category looking at small windows of time, I think I'd put him kind of up there with the Aikmans and the Steve Youngs as someone who can be considered for, you know, a great quarterback throughout the entire decade. Mm-hmm. But Vinny Testaverde is a time capsule guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although it's funny because he played since 87.
Yeah. He's been around a long time.
87 through like the 2000s. And even though we say he did his most damage, I think, in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then after that, he was kind of just a backup.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was kind of a highly touted guy for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kerry Collins, kind of the same thing.
Mark Rypien. They're
journeyman guys.
Yeah.
But their names are just kind of like the ones that have just been thrown. They've just been in kind of the zeitgeist of the league for so long. Just growing up, I just knew the names. Vinny Testaverde.
Yeah.
You know, Kerry Collins. Like, oh, okay, like. Like, I think on that Carolina team with Kevin Green, Kerry Collins was the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So,
speaking of Carolina, Steve Berline
is
definitely a time capsule guy.
Scott Mitchell.
Keyshawn Johnson.
Yeah.
Meeshawn
Johnson.
Give me the damn ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I want to score.
Chris Warren for the Seahawks.
He's a time capsule player. Yeah.
Keyshawn Johnson.
Sorry.
Chris Warren. Okay.
Yeah.
Dorsey Levins. Garrison Hurst.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Garrison Hurst.
Robert Smith, the running back for the Vikings, mm-hmm. and then Rod Smith.
Yeah, for the Broncos.
Who, he's another one of those guys that falls under the radar. He was a good, reliable
really
receiver.
Mm-hmm. Very, very solid.
And Antonio Freeman, I have written down.
Robert Brooks
is another good one. Jamal Anderson.
He's
the exact definition for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I think of Jamal Anderson, I think like 97, 98, 99, and that's it. Like after that, that and I first saw the Dirty Bird from Jamal Anderson, which was a touchdown celebration. And then
for what team?
Oh, the Falcons. You know, you want to see Dan Reeves do the Dirty Bird? YouTube it. and then we talked about Jimmy Smith earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He's another one of those liquid guys.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of a guy earlier that I'd forgotten about, and he was okay. Did he have maybe one Pro Bowl? Two Pro Bowls, actually. But it was a little bit later in his career. Brad Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah. He was on that Vikings team.
Yep.
That
yeah.
Went yep. to the NFC Championship in 98.
He won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, with the Buccaneers.
With the Buccaneers, mm-hmm. But so, he was good. He was
okay. For sure. And so that was a pretty extensive look at the players. I think one thing we forgot to mention, not only in marketing, but you could also own these players because of action figures and toys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a Kenner lineup for a while of they basically were just different posable figures, and I remember there's a couple that I really remember. Like if you remember the ones for Shaquille O'Neal that they did in the 90s, Shaq Attack.
Oh yeah,
they basically did the same thing but with football players. But it was usually just them outstretched, or like someone like running, like catching a football over their shoulder. But I remember I remember the Brett Favre one. I remember, yep. like, for whatever reason, it was probably because they were just, for about 4 years, 3 years, just always in the Super Bowl, and they were always popular. Mm-hmm. But I remember the Troy Aikman one,
yep.
and the Michael Irvin one.
Yeah.
And the Emmitt Smith one. I mean, those were the big three.
Did
so,
they come with cards?
They came with a card, and then they came with, like, a base for you to put them on. And
yeah.
usually the base had, like, some sort of, like, really rudimentary scenery of right. some kind, like some sort of, like, field
like a
goal.
Sideline.
Yeah, like either a sideline or, like, a, like, I don't even know. Like, just, like, something just to show that, yeah. hey, look, they're catching this. In the real world.
Yeah.
like, yeah. you recognize this. This is a thing from the real world. Mm-hmm. A patch of grass.
And something else we'd probably be remiss if we didn't bring up is that the Madden franchise started in 92.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, man.
That has become an empire.
A juggernaut. Yeah. And along with the Madden games, the Madden curse.
Yeah.
Which. Who can we thank for the Madden curse but John Madden himself?
I think they're cursed.
Well, it's fun. Like I don't think it's really a thing anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, the last three or four have probably been okay. Although Antonio Brown was 2 years ago, and boy, he's a mess.
Yikes. So speaking of Super Bowls, which Antonio Brown will never win one again.
No.
I'm going to run through the Super Bowl winners, and you'll get a sort of a look at some of the juggernauts that came through in the 90s. Now, keep in mind that the year Super Bowl takes place in crowns the champion of the prior year because the Super Bowl takes place in February. So, for example, for the 89 season, the champ was crowned in 90.
Right.
So I'm sort of going to bend the rules here, and the Super Bowl that took place in 1990, so Super Bowl 24, was the 49ers crowning the champ in the 89 season. 91 was Super Bowl 25, and that was the Giants beating the Bills. 92 was Super Bowl 26, was the Redskins beating the Bills. 93 was Super Bowl 27, which was the Cowboys beating the Bills.
Poor Bills.
You notice the Bills in there a lot, 4 years in a row. Tremendous teams, just couldn't win the big one. 94, Super Bowl 28 was the Cowboys beating the Bills. Super Bowl 29 and 95 was the 49ers beating the Chargers. Super Bowl 30 and 96 was the Cowboys beating the Steelers. Super Bowl 31 and 97 was the Packers beating the Patriots.
Ew.
There you go. 98, Super Bowl 32 was the Broncos beating the Packers.
We don't need to talk
about that one. Super Bowl 33 was the Broncos beating the Falcons. And then Super Bowl 34 for the 99 season in the year 2000 was the St. Louis Rams beating the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, yeah.
So a great way to wind out the decade.
Greatest show on turf. Yep.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. Jinx, you owe all of us a Coke.
They're in the fridge outside.
Yeah.
Dang it.
So, centered around out this episode, we should talk about some of the other ways that football was marketed, and that was through movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the 90s had some pretty notable 90s movies and some pretty shitty 90s movies. But that's okay, because we're going to treat them all equally. So I've got some of the 90s football movies written down, and of course my favorite movie of all time, Little Giants.
Yes. If you want to hear more about that, we did a Radcast Reynolds on it with Dave Little.
Yeah, that's
exactly
great.
And then also my favorite movie is the garbage picking, field goal kicking Philadelphia phenomenon.
Who could forget Tony Danza
and
not nominated.
Plays a garbage man.
I'm gonna take this bag of garbage and I'm gonna kick it over there. And then Mona, you're gonna come in here. And then Jonathan and Samantha, you're gonna come over here. And I'm gonna go over. I'm gonna kick it over there.
Yes. I don't know what you're talking about, but you still want me to hold this garbage for you?
The guy that's not Ray Romano is in that movie.
Yeah, that was a shot in the dark. I completely forgot it.
There actually is.
I've only seen that movie once, and it was on The Wonderful World of Disney when it premiered.
Yeah.
On ABC.
And Tony Danza was a garbage man who could just kick the shit out of some garbage. And I guess someone from the Eagles was walking by and was like, what the hell?
Hey, our field goal kicker's terrible.
Yeah. Exactly.
That guy's better.
Exactly. So go check that one out.
I will say the first one of the only things I remember from that movie is the first game that Tony Danza plays in that movie.
Yeah.
He kicks it off, and he kicks it through the uprights, and they say, oh, field goal. No.
Yeah. Oh, it's not a kickoff. Field goal.
Yeah, yeah, on
the
like kickoff. He kicks that. It through the it's uprights, like and they're like, yards. Yeah. It's so far. And even if he does, it doesn't count. Like, yeah. That's not how the rules work.
Yeah, exactly.
You just disregard them. It's fine.
And so the lesser movie to that, Rudy.
yeah.
No, I love Rudy. Necessary Roughness.
Yeah, that's a
Scott
good movie.
Scott Bakula, Sinbad.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Kathy Ireland.
Kathy Ireland plays their kicker.
Yeah.
Balthazar.
Balthazar.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
need to go out there and play football.
That was his motivational
the
speech.
The odds we need are all around.
You know what? That's more Doc Brown. That's,
yeah. Marty!
Yeah. The Program. Yep. James Caan.
Yeah, James yeah, yeah. Caan.
Varsity Blues.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Waterboy.
You my boy, Blue.
Yeah. Exactly.
That
that's
gave
old
us. Yeah, I hate that line. Everybody says
everyone
that line.
It, yeah.
It's just like, I love Lamp.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, Varsity Blues, for just giving us a terrible catchphrase.
The Waterboy.
Waterboy.
Air Bud Golden Receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Angels in the End Zone, a Matthew Lawrence romp.
Yeah. That was also a Disney.
A Wonderful World, yeah.
World
Disney.
Of Disney
and so
movie.
So was Saintly Switch with David Alan Grier.
Yes.
I remember as that a member one. Of yeah. the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
And his wife is Angela Bassett.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
What's love got to do with it?
Exactly. So
until you almost say.
So football in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
we're rounding out our discussion just saying that this was such a wonderful decade
in
sports.
It was great.
And also, I just realized we didn't talk at all about Bo Jackson.
Oh,
what
my gosh.
You've got to be
hell
kidding me.
Is oh, my
wrong
gosh. Okay.
With us.
Okay. We have to do it right now.
Yeah.
We oh, have yeah. to. Sorry.
We'll probably talk about Bo Jackson. We won't hit another break. We'll just end the episode because we're going a little
yeah.
long, which is fine.
Yeah.
But Bo Jackson.
We'll end the episode talking about Bo Flippin' Jackson.
You don't know Bo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
this guy
gosh.
Was a this
phenomenon.
Guy was a phenomenon.
Seriously.
You want to talk about like a prolific mythological athlete.
Could do no wrong for about 4 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like
football, baseball, he was an all-star, pro bowler.
Just crazy. Look at some of his highlights. And granted, he didn't, like, if you look at his stats in the NFL, they weren't like eye-catchingly amazing.
Mm-mm.
But just looking, this is one where the eye test
yeah.
is all you need.
Yeah.
This exactly. guy was the real deal, was amazing. And if you played Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah.
You always wanted him on your team.
Yeah. And you always wanted him endorsing your products.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because he was an absolute phenomenon.
He was gold.
You have, yeah. you have Bo Jackson to thank for Nike's dominance.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
If you go watch You Don't Know Bo,
yeah.
the 30 for 30, it's incredible. It's
probably
so
one
great.
Of the best ones, probably top five.
The guy is a complete anomaly as well, because
yeah.
apparently he never lifted weights, and he looked like he was chiseled out of granite.
He ran like a 4.12
yeah.
or 4.13,
yep.
something crazy.
He's like a superhero.
Yeah.
Like, he's
yeah.
ridiculous.
He's mythological, really. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
The media circus surrounding Bo Jackson was like nothing. I
mm-hmm.
mean, Deion Sanders, you know, that was...
yeah.
Deion Sanders had his own thing.
That was
where
that
was
a lot
popular.
Of self-marketing.
It was.
Bo was just so...
He didn't ask for that. It
mm-mm.
just kind of came.
Yeah.
Like, everybody
so.
Was like, you can't believe this guy. Is this guy for real?
Both tremendous athletes, but Bo is on such a different plane as far mm-hmm. as, like...
raw physical talent.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah.
as far as this, like, the biggest what if
yeah.
Bo Jackson...
Yeah.
He could have been the next, like, Jim Brown.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he could have dominated.
Yeah.
And he basically was so strong that he stepped wrong, and his hip popped out of place, and it popped back in, and just,
mm-hmm.
he was never the same after that.
Yeah. Could never recover.
I mean, we could regale you all, like... all you want, but honestly, just go look up You Don't Know Bo, the
yeah.
ESPN 30 for 30.
And watch
30,
Bo you know. Jackson highlights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and this was our second foray into the 90s as part of our deep dive into the four major sports in this particular decade. And this was I think this was good.
Yeah,
this is football. Good. Football has a lot to offer.
Thank you for joining us again, Jeremy.
Thank
you for joining
thanks
us.
For having me. It was a blast. I'm excited for upcoming episodes. But this was a lot of fun. It's always fun to think back on what used to be,
mm-hmm.
and football was never the way it was in the 90s before, mm-hmm. like before the 90s, and it will never be the same again. I mean, largely because of rules and all of that. And I'm all for player safety and everything, but it was just a different game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it was so amazing and so wonderful to watch during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever get a chance, as we've said many times, go look up YouTube videos.
Yep.
It's worth your time.
Bo Jackson,
several of the Deion 30 Sanders. For 30 documentaries on a bunch of different teams during that time. Yep. You don't know Bo. Buffalo Bills.
Four Falls of Buffalo
is tremendous.
Yep. Junior Seau.
The Junior Seau one's really good. The one about Deion making.
Yeah, Deion's double play.
Deion's double play that basically had to decide whether he wanted to play.
He tried to play.
Two different games.
Yeah, exactly.
One for the MLB and one for the NFL, and it was very important that he be at both. All that to say, check out some stuff on 90s football on YouTube if you get a chance. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And you all will be hearing Jeremy again during our 5 weeks of Fright. We're going to have him on for an upcoming episode. Again, we're going to keep you in the dark about all that, but make sure you check that out. And as we always say here on the Radcast, be good to yourself, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.